بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. الحمد لله رب العالمين، والصلاة والسلام على سيدنا وعظيمنا وحبيب قلوبنا وشفيع نفوسنا أبي القاسم محمد. وعلى أهل بيته الطيبين الطاهرين وأصحابه الغر الميامين. الحمد لله الذي جعلنا من المتمسكين بولاية سيدي ومولاي علي بن أبي طالب، الحمد لله الذي هدانا لهذا وما كنا لنهتدي لولا أن هدانا الله. If I can request the sound room just to raise the volume a little. Respected scholars, brothers and sisters, Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah wa barakatuh. We continue with verse 9 of chapter 49 of the Holy Quran. With Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala saying, Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. وَإِن طَائِفَتَانِ مِنَ الْمُؤْمِنِينَ اقْتَتَلُوا فَأَصْلِحُوا بَيْنَهُمَا فَإِن بَغَتْ إِحْدَاهُمَا عَلَى الْأُخْرَى فَقَاتِلُوا الَّتِي تَبْغِي حَتَّى تَفِيءَ إِلَىٰ أَمْرِ اللَّهِ فَإِن فَاءَتْ فَأَصْلِحُوا بَيْنَهُمَا بِالْعَدْلِ وَأَقْسِطُوا إِنَّ اللَّهَ يُحِبُّ الْمُقْسِطِينَ. We had discussed how this chapter of the Quran seeks to build a society whose foundation is justice and fairness, equality and equity, and had understood that the basis of building the ethical society on the first level is reverence for the position of the Prophet in that society, submitting unconditionally to his words, for he has come with the role of perfecting the morals of mankind. Secondly, then, we were taught that our tongue can make or break the society or the community within which we live, and that the weight of the tongue is so light, but its power is so devastating. We here see how Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala tries to tell us that the aim of an ethical society is that there is a peaceful coexistence between the members of that society. I don't think there's any human being, well, barring a few in London at the moment, who look to cause disruption in society or look to wake up every morning in a society that is full of trouble. Everybody, when we look to wake up in the morning, we look to wake up in an environment where there is harmony, isn't it? And it is very rare to find any human being who wakes up in the morning and looks to leave his house and see people looting shops, or looks to leave his house and see people killing each other on the streets. Because that is more of an environment for a barbarian than a human being. Now in London, for example, you see looting happening. You see people who are destroying shops of innocent members of society who are trying to promote good, are having their shops looted by people who are trying to promote havoc. Islam recognized that the basis of an ethical society is justice. When a person understands justice, they will look to have a society which is therefore brought up on peace and harmony. Someone turns around and says, But your religion itself was spread by the sword. Say, what do you mean? Say, your prophet, when we read about him, most of his life is spent using a sword, not spent using morals. Badr, sword. Uhud, sword. Khandaq, sword. Khaybar, sword. Hunain, sword. They say, you're trying to tell us your religion is saying in the Quran, وَإِنْ طَائِفَتَانِ مِنَ الْمُؤْمِنِينَ اَخْتَتَلُوا فَأَصْلَحُ بَيْنَهُمَا. But your own religion is a religion which spreads by the sword. When the Quran says, if two factions from amongst the believers begin fighting one another, then restore peace between them both. They say, your prophet says in this verse that you should restore peace, but your prophet had no peace in his initiatives at all. Your prophet was a man. If you disagree with him, he takes out his sword. And this, of course, was an accusation that was always leveled against the scholars of ethics in Islam. That how do you expect to build an ethical society when the way your prophet did it was by putting a sword on someone's neck? We can all be ethical if there's a sword by our neck. Not for the love of ethics, but because we are coerced. Now, how do we reply? Because that's not just an accusation of medieval Europe. It's not an accusation of 500-year-old historical works. Even the Pope a few years ago mentioned that the religion of Islam was a religion which is spread by the sword. Our reply comes by stating the following. When our Prophet began his mission and publicly revealed it at the age of 40, he spent 13 years in Mecca and 10 years in Medina, yes? Until he died at the age of 63. In the first 13 years in Mecca, did he ever raise his sword? If you ask many Muslims, when did Badr happen? They don't know. They know there was a battle. Was it Mecca? Was it Medina? I don't know. I know Badr happened. I know Khandaq happened. I know Khaybar. But where? When? I'm not sure. No. You have to be sure. Because you're representing the religion of Islam. There's no such thing in 2011 that I'm not sure. When the Prophet spread the religion in the first 13 years, they would take his companions and kill them. Did he raise his sword? Sumayya, the mother of Ammar, and Yasir, the father of Ammar, were killed. Did he raise his sword? Bilal had a big black rock on his chest. Did he raise his sword? Ja'far bin Abu Talib has to leave with the Sahaba to Africa. Did he raise his sword? They put 3 years economic sanctions on him and his family and his companions. Did he raise his sword? They wanted to kill him in the middle of the night. Did he raise his sword? 13 years in Mecca, he did not raise a sword once. When he went to Medina, that's when all these battles happened. In other words, up until the age of 53, the Prophet was not involved in one battle. 54, no battle. The first battle he fought in was the Battle of Badr at the age of 55. And he died at the age of 63. That means 8 out of 23 years of his prophethood was in battle. Even when you look at the Battle of Badr in chapter 22, verse 39 to 40, The Quran says the reason we allowed our Prophet to fight is because he's being oppressed. And that if he doesn't fight, there will not be a single church, synagogue, or mosque left on the earth, or left on the earth of Arabia. I ask you, why is Islam concerned about the church? Why is Islam concerned about the synagogue? Why is Islam concerned about the mosque? When today the Muslims are not concerned about the church, and the Muslims are not concerned about the synagogue, and the Muslims for 2 months a year are concerned about the mosque. The reason Islam defended itself at Badr wasn't just to defend Islam, but to defend any religion which says there is one God. Because who's fighting you at Badr? The polytheists. Shirk sought to overtake Tawheed. And even after the battle of Badr, if I spread my religion by the sword, then I wouldn't say to my companions, release those prisoners if they teach our people to read and write. What I should be doing is saying, if I spread the religion by the sword, I should be saying, kill them, because they fought us, and anyone who fights us should be killed. The same at Uhud, the same at Khandaq, the same at Khaybar. Defensive wars to protect what? To protect the religion. Therefore you find that those who say your ethical society is built on the fact if two factions fight each other, then you should restore peace and your religion spread by the sword. No. Islam did not spread its religion by the sword in the time of the Prophet, because the Prophet's greatest victory was not a war. It was a treaty called Hudaybiyah. When Allah says, "Inna fatahna laka fatham mubina," we have given you a clear victory. Was Badr the clear victory, or Uhud, or Khaybar, or Khandaq, or Hudaybiyah? Which one? Hudaybiyah. Hudaybiyah didn't use a sword, yet Allah said that's his greatest victory. Oh yes, his companions, some of them were ready with a sword. But the man was chosen to build a moral society because he had more wisdom than them. Do you know to what lengths he went in the Hudaybiyah Treaty? The first line in the Hudaybiyah Treaty, there will be 10 years no fighting between the Muslims and the Quraysh. Yes? How many years? 10. In the past, fight. 10 years. And do you know what he said? If one of my Muslims wants to return to you and become a Quraysh, I'll let him go. If one of your people becomes a Muslim and comes to me, I don't mind sending him back to you if you want him. That's what length he went to. Imagine, someone from Quraysh becomes a Muslim, leaves Mecca to come to Medina to join the Prophet said, I'll give him back to you, don't worry. I'm willing. Do you know how sometimes when someone says, will you be the guarantor between us in an arbitration? And you'll say, if they don't pay, I'll pay. Yes? Rasulullah made himself a guarantor with the Quraysh. I'm the guarantor. If one of your people becomes a Muslim and comes to me, I'll send him back. Don't worry. I'm even willing to lay his life for this treaty. Because my religion never came to kill. My religion came to bring people together. Someone says, Sayyid Ammar, I'm still not convinced that your religion, even though it says, وَإِن طَائِفَتَانِ مِنَ الْمُؤْمِنِينَ اَخْتَتَلُوا فَأَصْلِحُ بَيْنَهُمَا, I'm still not convinced. Why? He says, Sayyid Ammar, have you read Surah At-Tawbah? I say, yes, I've read Surah At-Tawbah. He says, your Quran is built on peace? I'm like, yes, it's built on peace. He's like, have you read Surah 9 verse 5? I'm like, yes, I've read Surah 9 verse 5. He's like, so what do you think now, peace? Let's see what the Surah 9 verse 5 says. When the holy months have passed, kill the polytheist wherever you see him, and ambush him, and surround him, and slay him. Peace? I love it when Muslims say, our religion is a religion of peace. But then many Muslims have not read their Quran. If I come to a non-Muslim at work, he says, can you give me a present? I say, here's the Quran. This is our book. Non-Muslim returns home that day. He opens on Surah 9 verse 5. Let me see what their Quran says. Because they talk about their Quran so much. Kill the disbeliever wherever you see him and slay him and ambush him. Peace? Which peace? Are we trying to kid with the people about peace? That doesn't sound too peaceful to me. CNN and Fox News love this verse. Because every time something happens, they put that verse up. Muhammad, the verse. Muhammad, the sword. How do we reply? I just said that the Hudaybiyah peace treaty was signed, wasn't it? 10 years there would be no fighting. One night in Mecca, Banu Bakr of the Quraysh ambushed Banu Khuza'a and killed their people. Surah At-Tawbah is the only surah which doesn't begin with Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim, yes? Because Allah said, no more mercy to these people, even when we signed a treaty to make peace with them. And we could have been on the upper hand, but we decided not to fight them, to sign peace. They come behind our backs and slay us. The next verse CNN does not mention, and the previous verse CNN does not mention. Verse 4 says, those who didn't break the treaty, don't attack them. The verse after it says, those who come to you asking about Islam, they may have misconceptions, let them hear about Islam. The verse itself says, when the holy months have passed, Muharram, Rajab, Dhul Qa'dah, Dhul Hijjah, only when those months have passed, only then can you go to those people who have ambushed. So there is a condition. Islam of the Prophet wasn't spread by the sword. Islam after the Prophet may have been spread by the sword. But we must differentiate between Islam and Muslims. The Quran says in this verse, when two factions from the mu'mineen, وَإِن طَائِفَتَانِ مِنَ الْمُؤْمِنِينَ اَخْتَتَلُوا فَأَصْلِحُ بَيْنَهُمَا. When two factions from the believers come towards each other and they fight, make peace between them. Someone says, Sayyid Ammar, the West are better at organizing peace than we are. I say, but peace has conditions. Who's organizing the peace is vital. You can't have a state which is powerful with another state which is looking after its interests, making peace for a group of people who live in settlements. Can you? When the Quran said, when the believers come, first aspect was, when you come to make peace, don't bring me someone who's extra powerful and someone who's weak. That peace agreement will never work. Pick people who are equal to make peace between the brothers, yes? Secondly, don't pick a person who's going to make peace who has interests in the issue. Therefore, you found that even Imam Amir al-Mu'mineen, salawatullahu wa salamuhu alayhi, in his own lifetime, on many occasions, you found that this verse was applicable. That when two believing parties begin fighting each other, then restore peace between them both. I'd like to ask a question. The verse says, وَإِن طَائِفَتَانِ مِنَ الْمُؤْمِنِينَ اَقْتَتَلُوا وَإِن طَائِفَتَانِ مِنَ الْمُؤْمِنِينَ اَقْتَتَلُوا فَأَصْلِحُ بَيْنَهُمَا. When two parties of the believers fight, make peace between them. You find here that sometimes even in Islam, you may have two parties who say La ilaha illallah, who say Muhammad Rasulullah, who may come to a level where they fight each other. Isn't that true? Are they both on haq? That's where Islamic history differs. Our brothers in other schools in Islam say, both are on haq, the killer and the killed. That's going to be some Jannah we're all going to, I'll tell you that. It's going to be some Jannah, some heaven. Thanks for killing me at Jamal. It's nice seeing you here. Thanks for beheading me at Safin. How's your family? Thanks for killing me at Karbala. May Allah be pleased with you. Would you believe there are certain people when they read this verse, they say, you see, believers can fight each other. I say, yes, it's true, but there must be one who's on haq. Ali ibn Abi Talib was Khalifa for 4.5 years. How did we treat Ali ibn Abi Talib? Do you know what is the thing that hurts the heart the most? The religion of Islam would never have reached where it's reached were it not for Rasulullah and Ali ibn Abi Talib. Name me a warrior like Ali ibn Abi Talib in his youth with the way he served the religion. Okay, at Saqifah, Ali ibn Abi Talib was 33. He's a young man, isn't he? Prophet Jesus can speak from the cradle, he's not young. I don't know, what's the logic in this religion? 1 minute a baby speaks from the cradle. The next minute, Yahya is given wisdom at a young age. But Ali ibn Abi Talib at 33 is still young. I give the benefit of the doubt. Saqifa, Ali ibn Abi Talib is young. At Jamal, he's 58. You still have a problem with him? Honestly. At Jamal, he's 58. If at 33 he wasn't wise, at 58 he's still not wise? And Jamal, why? Why did they raise the army of Jamal? They raised the army at the battle of Jamal because the very people who instigated Uthman's death now are saying we want revenge for Uthman. And you know, amongst those people are people who were with Rasulullah. So if those companions were so loyal to Rasulullah and they pledged under the tree, what happened to them afterwards? Further than that, if Uthman is rightly guided and his killers are rightly guided, then can you explain to me what rightly guided means? When Imam is killed, the news reaches certain people. When Uthman is killed, the news reaches certain people. Uthman has been killed. She said, good. Ali has replaced him. Who? Ali, the son of Abu Talib. Let's raise an army. Rasulullah had warned Aisha, when you hear the dogs barking, do not continue. Turn around. Of course, the excuses are given in plenty. That she wanted to turn around, but the people convinced her otherwise. People can convince her. She leads the army, Talha and Zubair join. Now all of these people who've come to the Battle of Jamal, all of them are mu'mineen, yes. I don't doubt. They all believe in La ilaha illallah Muhammad Rasulullah. They all believe. But on the day of Jamal, do not tell me the killer and the killed are believers. There's got to be some sort of mizan, some sort of scale. Talha and Zubair, why did they fight? They wanted to be governors of Basra and Kufa. And the Imam did not give them positions. They came to see the Imam. What do you want? They said, we have a private issue to discuss with you. He blew out the candle. He put another candle. Why have you blown out the candle? He said, that first candle is bought from the money of the Muslims. I blew it out and I'm going to use the candle from my own money for your own private issues. Ali ibn Abi Talib. So when they get to the Battle of Jamal, وَإِن طَائِفَتَانِ مِنَ الْمُؤْمِنِينَ اقْتَتَلُوا فَأَصْلِحُ بَيْنَهُمَا. If two of the believing parties in your Muslim community fight, the first point is to make peace. Imam Amir al-Mu'mineen came out. Aisha, did you not hear Rasulullah say, Ali is with the truth and the truth is with Ali? Aisha, do you not remember? Salama told you that one day I fear you may be the woman on the hairy camel who fights Ali. The aim is to bring peace. Imam cries when he sees the army. He looks at Talha, he says, Talha, O Abu Muhammad, we grew up in the same side. We fought all of us together. And now you come and fight me. You don't remember those days when all of you stood back and I was at the front. And none of you would face Amr ibn Wid. And I was 28 years of age and I stood up to him. And at Khaybar, all of you wanted that banner and I raised that door. And at Hunain, you all ran away and I stood. And now, what have I done for you to fight me? You're the killer of Uthman. I gave my sons to protect Uthman. Hassan and Hussein stood outside Uthman's door protecting him. Because Imam hated to see believers fight. A society built on ethics will never see mu'mineen fighting. Then he looked at Zubair. Zubair is Imam Ali's auntie's son. First cousin. Do you know when Saqifah happened? Do you know who defended Imam Ali the most? Zubair. Zubair took his sword out. How dare you leave the man chosen on the day of Ghadir? And at Jamal, Zubair, you're my cousin. Forget everything else. Is there no Salat al-Rahim between us? Imam tried to show this verse. وَإِن طَائِفَتَانِ مِنَ الْمُؤْمِنِينَ اَخْتَتَلُوا فَأَصْلِحُ بَيْنَهُمَا. When you see mu'mineen fighting, make peace. Zubair said, you are right, I'm wrong today. And he turned around to run away and they killed him. I asked Zubair, why did you run away? If Ali ibn Abi Talib is right, why not join his army? There's the test. Hur bin Yazid al-Riyahi joined. He didn't run away. Zubair ran, got killed. Allah knows. Some people were confused that day because they've read this verse. Ali, mu'min. Ammar bin Yasir, Hassan, Hussein, one side. Aisha, Talha, Zubair, Marwan ibn al-Hakim, which should be enough for you to know what's happening. On the other. So they came to Imam Ali and they said, "We are confused. We see this, this, this one side, this, this, this the other." Imam gave them an answer I will never ever forget. Imam said, "Do not look at the personalities, then look at the truth. First look at the truth, then judge the personalities." Look at the truth, then judge the personalities. Look at who I am. What did Rasulullah say about me? And now look. If you thought that was enough, at Safin, today some people say that the beautiful thing about Jamal, Imam Ali said to his soldiers, if the people run away from their army, don't chase them. They are believers. Let them run. At Safin, people today say, Sayyidina Muawiyah fought Sayyidina Ali. Sayyidina Ali and Muawiyah. This is going to be one beautiful Jannah we're going to, I tell you. But you know what hurt me on the day of Safin? When Ammar bin Yasir got killed, the people then turned to Muawiyah and say, "Now we know that you might be wrong. So Ali ibn Abi Talib, you don't know that he's wrong. But when Ammar dies, Muawiyah is wrong. When Ali ibn Abi Talib is being fought, we're still not sure. Only when Ammar bin Yasir dies, yes, now Muawiyah, maybe he's wrong." Therefore, Imam first resorted always in his life to what? To try and make peace. But then the Quran ordered, however, if one party revolts against the other, then fight the revolting party until they submit to the command of Allah. What does this mean? Imam Amir al-Mu'mineen himself on many occasions would show, in Islam we don't have this concept, turn the other cheek. No. In Christianity you have a concept. If someone slaps you, just go like this. Yes, but there's a problem. Then this person's going to go around slapping everyone. Can you build an ethical society where all of us are standing in line to get slapped? Can we? When we say turn the other cheek, we are allowing zulm to rise, not building ethics. When I see someone slapping the cheeks of innocent believers, there is no way I'm just going to sit there and say, yes, keep slapping, it's good. We like to see people getting slapped. Imam in his wasiyah, what does he say before he passes away to Imam Hassan and Imam Hussein? وَصَلَاحُ ذَاتَ بَيْنَكُمْ فَإِنِّي سَمِعْتُ جَدَّكُمَا يَقُولُ صَلَاحُ ذَاتَ الْبَيْنِ أَفْضَلُ مِنْ عَامَّةٍ الصَّلَاةِ وَالصِّيَامِ. First Imam says, I advise you to establish and foster peace amongst two opposing parties. Since surely I have heard your grandfather say establishing peace between two parties is better than praying and fasting for 1 year. But then when Imam becomes Khalifa, the tone changes. That yes, the first aim should be establish peace. If you notice that the other group has no intention for peace, and their only intention is oppression, stand up against them and fight them. I do not care if the other group say ashhadu an la ilaha illallah or ashhadu anna muhammadan rasulallah if they don't have the principles of rasulallah. That's why he says in another line, amma walladhi falaqa alhabata wa bara annasamata lawla hudur alhadir wa qiyam alhujja biwujud an-nasir وَمَا أَخَذَ اللَّهُ عَلَى الْعُلَمَاءِ أَنْ لَا يُقَارُ عَلَى كِضَّةِ ظَالِمٍ وَلَا سَغَبِ مَظْلُومٍ لَأَلْقَيْتُ حَبْلَهَا عَلَى غَارِبِهَا وَلَسَقَيْتُ آخِرَهَا بِكَأْسِ أَوَّلِهَا. What does the Imam say? Imam says, I swear. And this is why he took leadership. Ali ibn Abi Talib didn't take leadership because he wants power. No. To remove oppression like these people. I swear by him who split the grain to grow and created living beings that had it not been for the people coming to me and had the supporters not exhausted the argument, and if there had not been the pledge of Allah with the scholars that they should not acquiesce in the gluttony of the oppressor and the hunger of the oppressed, I would have cast the rope of Khalafah on its shoulders and would have given the last one the same treatment as I gave the first. Why does he say he took Khalafah? Why? Because I cannot allow, as a scholar, the oppressor to take over the hunger of the oppressed. How can I, as a leader or any Muslim leader, watch a group of people say La ilaha illallah Muhammad Rasulallah but oppress their own believing brothers? Isn't that true? The Quran said, in our ethics in Islam, make peace when two people of the believers quarrel. But if you notice the first group is still oppressing, fight them. If you look within the Quran, you'll find, for example, in Surah 11 verse 113, وَلَا تَرْكَنُوا إِلَى الَّذِينَ ظَلَمُوا فَتَمَسَّكُمُ النَّارِ. Do not incline towards those people who are oppressive and do wrong, otherwise fire will seize you. In Islam, we never sit and watch dhulm. Never. Even if it's our own brothers, do we watch them perform dhulm? My own brother, if he is oppressive, there is no way I can sit and watch them perform dhulm. Even you find Amir al-Mu'mineen saying, Rasulullah Muhammad sallallahu alayhi wa alayhi wa sallam. Used to say, لَن تُقَدَّسَ أُمَّةٌ لَا يُؤْخَذُ لِلضَّعِيفِ فِيهَا حَقُّهُ مِنَ الْقَوِيِّ غَيْرَ مُتَتَ. What does the Imam say? That nation or government, Rasulullah used to say, that nation or government in which the rights of the oppressed and the poor are not guarded, and where the mighty and the powerful are not forced to accede to these rights, will never see happiness and salvation. That's why Imam, in his letter to Malik al-Ashtar, Imam practiced this on himself first. Malik, show mercy to the people in the way you want to be shown mercy by Allah. Do not be oppressive to the people in Islam. I don't care if I chose you. If you are a zalim, you must be removed. And that's why, when you look at the event of Karbala, Aba Abdullah al-Hussein, did he first try and make peace? At the beginning, Aba Abdullah warns them, from the time of Imam al-Hassan until the time of Imam al-Hussein, Aba Abdullah tries to warn them. But Yazid says, behead the man wherever he is. I try and tell the people of Medina, let's make peace, let's stop this. Mecca, let's stop this. Let me go towards Kufa. They block him at Karbala. A man like me does not pledge allegiance to a man like him. No way. I've tried to make peace. Umar bin Sa'ad used to not miss Salat al-Layl. Is Umar bin Sa'ad someone who says, he believes in God and the Prophet, yes. But Umar bin Sa'd is a zalim. And I don't care what he says. We must stand up against the zalim. Humiliation will never touch me. And that's why people ask the question, after Karbala, Mukhtar al-Thaqafi, was he right with what he did or no? Because people say, Mukhtar, why did he do that? Ahlul Bayt are forgiving people. People like Shimr bin Dil-Joshan, Umar bin Sa'd, Ibn Ziyad, Harmala bin Kahil, I don't care how many prayers they pray, they are oppressors even if they're from my religion. Mukhtar al-Thaqafi, when he stood up to find all of them, was highlighting the verse, وَإِن طَائِفَتَانِ مِنَ الْمُؤْمِنِينَ اَقْتَتَلُوا فَأَصْلِحُ بَيْنَهُمَا فَإِنْ بَغَدْ إِحْدَاهُمَا عَلَى الْأُخْرَى فَقَاتِلُوا الَّتِي تَبْغِي حَتَّى تَفِيَ إِلَىٰ أَمْرِ اللَّهِ. If the other one doesn't give in, then fight them until they do. But there's a final condition. فَإِنْ فَاءَتْ فَأَصْلِحُ بَيْنَهُمَا بِالْعَدْلِ وَأَقْسِطُ إِنَّ اللَّهَ يُحِبُّ الْمُقْسِطِينَ. But when they do so, then restore the peace that was between them with justice. If they don't give in, you fight them. If, however, they do give in, then restore with them the peace with justice. When Imam Ali finished the battle of Jamal, he saw Abdullah ibn Zubair gave in. Abdullah ibn Zubair gave in. Marwan ibn al-Hakam gave in. When they gave in, some of Imam's companions said, let's finish them. They are a group of people who are oppressors. Imam said, now that we have caught them, let's ask them, are they going to continue? They said, no, we give in. Imam said, then let them return home safe. Imam Ali ibn Abi Talib is the Quran walking. Would you let Abdullah ibn Zubair and Marwan ibn al-Hakam go? But the Quran says, if they do give in at the end, when a person gives in, you don't go ahead. No, treat them with justice. And that's why the lady turns around to the Imam and said, you are the killer of the beloved ones. He said, if I'm the killer of the beloved, I would have killed Ibn Zubair and Marwan ibn al-Hakam. And then on top of that, what did the Imam do? He sent the wife of Rasulullah back home. She gave in. Quran says, when the opposite believers give in, you let them go home with justice. I tell you, if it was a man lesser than Ali ibn Abi Talib, he would not have given in with justice. But he allowed her to go home, even though she was the cause of the death of thousands of Muslims. Therefore, you find that Islamic society says ethics is built on creating peace. But if there are oppressors, stand up against them. But even an oppressor, if he gives in at the end, then act with them with justice. For that is the better way. Inshallah, tomorrow we will continue by looking at the importance of brotherhood between the members of